Today, we're talking about domestic violence. The killing this weekend of Cassandra Perkins and the ensuing suicide by Chiefs player Jovan Belcher shone a light on a problem that is far more widespread than most people realize. As the Kansas City Star reported yesterday, at least 14 people in the Kansas City area have been killed this year by spouses or intimate partners. The events this weekend were the fourth murder-suicide. But there are many groups in the Kansas City area working to prevent such tragedies and to build awareness of the problem of domestic violence. Safe Home, Synergy, Hope House are a few of these. And joining us this morning from another, the Rose Brooks Center, is Marie Dispenza. Marie, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us today.
On average, I read in the Kansas City Star this morning, three people are killed every day around the country in domestic violence cases like these. How come we don't hear more about this?
I think that we often don't hear more about this because Well, people are afraid to talk about domestic violence. If it's happening to them, they may be afraid because their partner has threatened them to speak about it, or they just may be afraid because people won't believe them that it's really happening. Sometimes the signs aren't physical. You don't just see a black eye, and so when you talk about abuse that you're experiencing, if your friends and family can't see it, they're liable not to report it.
Yeah. Now, obviously, we don't know a lot of specifics about the Cassandra Perkins, Jovan Belcher case, but one thing we've heard in some of the reports from family and friends who have talked is that we knew that they had some problems, but we just didn't think anything was seriously wrong. How typical is it to hear things like that?
I think it's very typical. And sometimes, again, you know, the warning signs can be subtle. And so if your friend mentions to you that, you know, he's monitoring your phone calls, that's something to be concerned about. Even if someone might just write that off as jealousy, it could be more important than that. And so I think sometimes even the smaller signs that you might just think are casual relationship problems, if you see additional signs, it's something to get concerned about and to ask more questions about.
Yeah. So I mean, again, in some of this reporting we've heard since the incident, we've heard things like he was not a violent person. His teammates couldn't imagine it being him when they first heard. He did mentoring with young people. Again, not uncommon?
Not uncommon. I mean, you can expect that most abusers are actually very smart about their ability to control their partner. And so oftentimes you would never know that they were violent, or they may not have even had a propensity for violence before. And then it just escalates for some reason to a violent point, as it appears to have in this situation. Of course, we don't know for sure, but it appears to be that way.
Right. And thank you for saying that. We, of course, have no idea what occurred prior to,
absolutely.
To Saturday's events.
Absolutely.
I don't know how much you know about these other 13 cases that we've heard about in Kansas City this year. In five of those cases, the husband or boyfriend was the victim. Do domestic violence prevention efforts like Rose Brooks undertakes regard those cases in the same way, whether the victim is a man or a woman?
A little bit differently, but Rose Brooks Center, its crisis line is open to men, women, and anyone that needs help. And so we do serve men in that way. And of course, we serve young men that are children of the women that come to use our services. And so first and foremost, we do have a women's shelter. And so women are our focus. But through our crisis line, we can help in other ways, too.
I guess I wonder if there really is a typical case of domestic violence.
I think it's like everything, and you can try to define the textbook case, and there will be some similarities throughout. Of course, that's how we handle our counseling and therapy services, is by sort of looking at the trends. But every situation is unique, and you have to take that into consideration when working with someone through recovering from being a victim of domestic violence.
Well, today we want to talk a little bit about one of those cases, about warning signs that you or someone you care about may be a victim of domestic violence and what you can do about it. I want to bring into the conversation Liz Donnelly. Liz's daughter, Jennifer, was murdered by her estranged husband in 2005. Liz, thank you so much for being on Up to Date today.
Thank you for having me.
So would you mind telling us a little bit about your daughter, Jennifer?
My daughter, Jennifer, was the sunshine of our lives. She was the middle child of seven children, number four. She was caring. She was beautiful, had a beautiful singing voice. She loved people, whether they were friends, strangers, family. She was a very happy person.
How long had there been abuse in her marriage?
He was a controlling type person. We knew of verbal and emotional abuse. We did not know about the physical abuse until actually after she died and her daughter told us and some neighbors told us that police had been called on occasions. I think she hid it from us because she was embarrassed and because she wanted to have a normal family for her children.
So she was trying to maintain an appearance.
Yes.
Yeah. Who all did know about the abuse? She kept it from her family. Did anyone know?
I say her neighbors knew. Yeah. I don't even think her close friends at work really knew.
So, I'm asking about some what I know are painful details, but I think it's helpful for folks to know some of the story.
Sure.
Jennifer left her husband, right?
Yes, and they were divorced in January of 2005.
And then what happened?
And then he started stalking her. He would text her 30 to 40 times an hour. He came in the house once after we had the locks changed. The oldest daughter let him in to work on her computer, and he went upstairs and put a bug on Jenny's computer. Mm-hmm. So he knew every email she sent. We think he had a device to track phone messages on her cordless phone because he called right after a call and seemed to know just what she'd said, and the police said that's very easy to do.
Yeah. I want to talk more with you, Liz, about this, but let me ask you, Marie, this was obviously not a case of uncontrolled rage in a single moment. This was a long-term, carefully planned and executed effort.
Yes.
Is that unusual?
I wouldn't say that it's unusual. I think, as I mentioned before, a lot of abusers are not just stupid, rage-filled people on the street. They are calculated, and they are, again, controlling. A lot of times you honestly can't control a person in the ways that you have to in order to gain that kind of power over them. And so it's very common to see that situation where there's a concerted effort to control. And
it's one of the things that strikes me about Jenny's case is that she actually got away from the abuser. She actually ended the marriage, and yet the problem didn't go away.
Right. And often when abusers lose control, they start to escalate. So this seems to be what happened.
Yeah.
I thought she was free of him, but I feared for her safety because I thought when he figured out that this time he couldn't get back, that he would kill her. And in fact, he did.
Marie, Rosebrook Center offers, you mentioned, a women's shelter. Tell us about the shelter. How does that work?
Well, first and foremost, Rosebrook Center is there to provide safe nights if people need them. And so the shelter, it currently has 100 beds. However, that's a recent addition. We expanded our shelter from 75 to 100 beds earlier this year. And women come into the shelter through the police. And oftentimes that happens as a result of a lethality assessment program that was put into place in 2009, where the police ask a series of questions. And if you score a certain number on that questionnaire, essentially, then the officer right then and there gives you a way to contact Rosebrook Center because he's determined that you're at a high likelihood to be killed. And that's not the only way that people can come into Rosebrook Center. We have advocates at the hospitals and even advocates in our schools that can sometimes identify abuse. And so there's many other programs at Rosebrook Center that also help people besides just emergency shelter.
I want to invite our listeners to be part of this conversation. If you have questions about domestic violence, its impact on the community, on individual lives, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. If you'd prefer to email us, we would be glad to have your emails at update@kcur.org. In a moment, I'm going to give another phone number, the number of the National Domestic Violence Hotline, as well as some other numbers that may be helpful for those who are experiencing domestic violence or concerned about signs they see in others. Liz, as you reflect on Jenny's life and on her death, what do you wish had been different for those around her? What do you wish they had done differently?
I wish somebody had noticed something and brought it up to her. I think her sisters kind of confronted her at one point, and she just denied things. I was always reluctant to say anything when they were separated because I didn't want to alienate her when they got back together. But I've told my other kids, I apologize ahead of time, but from now on, if I'm concerned about something, I'm going to say it to you.
Yeah.
I think we need to look out for each other more.
Yeah. Marie, what other guidance would you give, especially to someone who can't be sure, who doesn't know for sure, doesn't have proof that something's happening, but is worried that it might be?
Sure. I do think, first of all, it's best to continue conversations like this about domestic violence so that people know more about it. Secondly, it's important just to listen and to pay attention, really. There are, as we've kind of seen, even when people say, well, we had no idea, when you start to think back on things, you discover that you may have had an idea if you'd really just kind of taken the time. And I think Liz is right in that people do need to confront their friends and not in an aggressive way, but just in a caring, concerned, I'm here to listen. And by the way, here's Rosebrook Center's crisis line number, and they can help you with anything. And there's no judgment. And we just want to make sure that you're safe.
I want to take a call from one of our listeners, Kim in Kansas City, Missouri. Kim, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for this show. There are so many women suffering from this. My question is regarding free legal assistance. My best friend was in an abusive marriage. She left the marriage because her 4-year-old daughter told her that her father had touched her inappropriately. My friend left, took her daughter with her, took her daughter to Children's Mercy immediately. They did an assessment. They were not able to find proof of the molestation, but she did go to the Sunflower House. She went through all the appropriate channels, and the court still awarded this abuser custody of her daughter. And she has spent over $15,000 trying to get her daughter back.
So, Kim, your question is there legal assistance available?
Yes.
Thanks for your question, Kim.
And I would say that, Rosebrook Center does not have an attorney on staff. And so, of course, I can't give legal advice over the radio. But there are services out there, and Legal Aid of Western Missouri is definitely a potential source. I believe strongly in their mission, and they are a very good help to Rosebrook Center in situations like these. And it's not uncommon for an abuser to be awarded custody for a myriad of reasons, and we could dedicate a whole show to that. So
Kim, Legal Aid of Missouri, and I imagine there's a parallel group in Kansas as well.
There is.
So we appreciate your call, Kim. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Let's talk with Meredith in Kansas City, Missouri. Meredith, good morning.
Good morning. By the way, for that last caller, Hope House actually works with, they have a lawyer who works with them, and they will work on issues of like custody and divorce that are specifically around domestic violence. However, you know, they only have limited ability to deal with limited number of cases, but it's another option.
Thanks for mentioning that, Meredith. And I want to just mention to our listeners that we will have a list on our website of some of the different organizations, different shelters that are available in the Kansas City area, along with their phone numbers. So you can find that at our website, which is kcur.org. Go ahead, Meredith.
I worked part-time at Hope House for about 5 years, and I did my student therapy internship there as well. And then even though I was as educated as possible about it, I found myself in a relationship with a woman where once she left me and then continued to stalk me and you know, like try to break me down, you know, telling me how awful I was and terrible things that I'd done to her and the kids, which weren't true, but, you know, she would take this little kernel of truth, this tiny kernel of truth, and blow it up. And so I found myself sitting there going, you know, did I do something wrong? Should I have done something differently? And, you know, that's how easy it is. One question I've gotten a lot over the years is, well, how could somebody stay in that kind of relationship? And one of the tools they have is the things that domestic violence has in common with being a hostage, only unlike a hostage situation where everybody knows, you know, you didn't choose to be kidnapped by somebody, this is somebody you chose. And so often people feel like they have to keep trying. If they just do something differently, it'll get better. You know, maybe they're not doing this enough or they're not doing that enough. Maybe they provoked him or, you know, maybe they weren't, you know, fair to her or whatever the case is. And it's just, you know, really important to remember that, you know, you deserve to be treated, you know, you deserve to live your life being listened to and believed and treated as a worthwhile human being.
Meredith, I really appreciate your call. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Liz Donnelly, I saw you nodding your head when Meredith was talking about that similarity between being in a hostage situation and being the victim of abuse.
I think abusers try to destroy a woman's self-esteem. And I think women have to realize that love doesn't hurt. You know, that's not love. They love a person to start with, and then it turns bad. It's not going to all of a sudden get better.
And Marie, that's something you've observed as well.
I agree, and I know that the question comes up often. You know, why doesn't she just leave? And I think it's important for us to turn the conversation from why doesn't she leave to why doesn't he stop hitting her.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk to Bill in Overland Park. Bill, thanks for holding.
Oh, you're welcome. Good show. I assume the show, the topic today is in response to what's happened out at Arrowhead Stadium. And the question is this. If someone is seeking counseling or help for a relationship matter and a counselor, you know, is hearing questions of, you know, control, power, abuse, is that counselor trained to ask the question, do either of the parties own handguns? And if the answer is yes, is the counselor could the counselor ask for those guns to be removed from the house?
Good question, Bill. Is there an effort to get weapons out of the house in these situations?
I do know, and again, I can't speak to every counselor being qualified to ask questions in this way, but I know that as part of the lethality assessment program, there is a question about weapons in the house.
The police are asking as well.
The police are asking as well. And again, I don't know that legally you can have someone remove a weapon from the home forcibly unless they determine that a felony has actually been committed. However, there's certainly a discussion to be had about finding a way to remove those weapons from the home. Sometimes, of course, it wouldn't be advisable to just do it without your abuser knowing because it could cause more abuse in the long run.
Right, and I think that seems to be what's so vexing about solving this problem. Right, is that so many of the steps that might actually bring about a greater level of safety or security or what would appear to be resolution or reconciliation are themselves the things that become the agitation that triggers the next incident.
Absolutely. And that is what is so important about getting in touch with Rosebrook Center or a domestic violence agency is that they are our staff is very skilled in safety planning efforts. Often the best, sometimes the best judgment may not be to leave immediately. It may be to do some planning leading up to that leaving point, because as Liz mentioned, when someone leaves tends to be the time when the highest level of violence occurs. And so that does there does need to be some planning around that if you want to make sure that you are absolutely safe.
Liz, I want to ask you, your daughter had two children at the time she was murdered.
Uh-huh.
How do people console and support the children of victims? What happened in your family?
Well, we just have to surround them with love. We got together right away with his family and our family and decided what's going to be best for the girls. And there's no replacement for a mother. And their father is in prison for life. So they're going through grief that we don't even understand in our own grief, but we just have to surround them with love continually.
Yeah. And are there resources? I mean, I think we imagine, especially having heard this weekend's events where both again both mother and father are no longer there for the child, what is the custody arrangement? How is it usually decided what happens with children?
Custody arrangements in domestic violence cases can be very difficult. And of course, this is where, you know, lots of legal issues get involved. But ultimately, again, Rosebrook Center is there to help families work through that process if they need help in determining what's in the best interest of the child. And of course, the courts are there to help too, but they do it in a little bit of a different way.
Yeah, right, and not necessarily in a way that everyone feels good about.
That's true, and I think that there'll probably always be someone that's not 100% satisfied. But I agree that families coming together is vitally important when both parents are lost, especially even if the result is more commonly the result is that a mother has died and the father is in prison. So. Mm-hmm.
Liz, your family has responded to this tragedy in a particularly compelling way. Tell us a little bit about the volleyball tournament that your family organizes.
Well, actually, Jenny's friends, two friends from work, started the tournament within 3 months of her death because they wanted to do something in her memory, and she loved playing sand volleyball out there at Volleyball Beach. And the first year or two, the money was given to the girls. And after that, my daughter Amy suggested that we give the money in memory of Jenny to Rose Brooks Center. So we formed a relationship for the last several years with Rose Brooks Center and to date have given, I think, over $60,000. Plus, you can't count the awareness that people have gotten, young people and old, that didn't know about domestic violence that come to the volleyball tournament and hear about it and learn about Rose Brooks Center and the many offerings they have for people.
That's great. Let's take one more. I'm sorry. I guess that we don't have that call anymore. I do want to give the phone number, actually, for the National Domestic Violence Hotline. That number is 800-799-7233. That's 800-799-7233. And, Marie, what can folks expect if they call that number?
They can basically expect whatever they need. If they need just someone to listen, they'll get that. If they need someone to help them safety plan, they'll also get that. And if they need references for local shelters, they will certainly get that too. So I think they can count on any level of services that they're interested in.
And Marie, I know you're not speaking for every shelter in the metro area, but Rose Brooks Center is here in Kansas City. Can you sort of quickly run through where folks in different parts of the city may want to turn?
It kind of depends. Depending on your your location may not matter based on how where you need to go in order to be safe. But the shelters in the area are Synergy Services, Safe Home, Hope House, Rose Brooks Center, New House, and I'm sure I'm forgetting something, but those are the ones that stick out in my mind.
We are, as I said, going to put all of those on our website, kcur.org, with phone numbers, ways that you can reach them. Since you mentioned the different parts of the metro area, Marie, let me ask you this. Are domestic violence incidents concentrated in particular parts of the city? Have there been changes recently? Are we seeing a growing uptick in any part of the area?
Well, as we've learned, domestic violence can happen anywhere and to anyone. Of course, shelters do tend to serve the populations that are closer to them. And so we know that our demographics show that, you know, violence happens in certain areas more than others. But that never means that it can't happen everywhere. I mean, it happens everywhere. We've seen it today or this weekend, famous people, not famous people, more commonly, of course.
Right.
And so regardless of what the demographics show, we like to remind people that it can happen to anyone.
And one of the pieces of speculation we even heard about this weekend was the player under so much pressure? Was Jovan Belcher under so much pressure, whether it be the losing Chiefs record or whatever? Does it have to be a person under pressure who commits these acts, or should people be a little more open-eyed to the possibilities there?
People should be more open-eyed. A lot of people ask about the economic conditions and does that exacerbate domestic violence. And, of course, it can change the circumstances, but economic challenges in and of themselves do not cause domestic violence.
It's a good word. We'll have to leave it there. Marie Dispenza is Manager of Marketing and Donor Communications for Rose Brooks Center. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
And Liz Donnelly, who's been active on this issue for the last 7 years, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
You can find more information about our guests and about our broadcasts at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, the story of a local woman who has come to terms with the fact that her father is gay. Plus, Brian McTavish returns with our weekend to-do list. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Brian Ellison, and you are up to date.